The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. What will I do?
Yeah, that's the start. That's everything else is.
Oh, you're clapping for sync.
Yeah. Sync with our video.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just a mark. Okay. So, our soon to come video.
Yes.
We promise.
Yes.
These are things. This is like me going to Montreal and never going up Montreal. But we've been twice with adequate opportunity to.
And you just refuse.
But I mean, it's just the city's so nice.
Right. Sure. Okay.
The mountain is not going anywhere.
Well, I mean.
But, you know, certain little shops, bodegas.
What do they call them?
Those sorts of flavors. Not at all. But I like the word.
I mean, it's a great word.
They do share. What is it? Pastrami?
Yeah, Montreal.
Aren't those two things in New York? No?
Oh, pastrami is definitely a New York thing.
No. Oh, it's not pastrami. I'll look it up. It's a roasted meat.
Okay.
The Rubens place. What is that?
Rubens is pastrami.
It is pastrami. Yeah. Actually, see, I'm doubting myself.
Please don't. No, pastrami is definitely a new. It is the Rubens.
Yeah.
Ruben. So it's a rye bread.
Pleasantly surprised.
At a coleslaw or some.
By a meal there.
Yeah.
And was introduced to just the most delectable wine, Italian, I think from Tuscany. Yes. Yeah. Very nice.
It would have been a Chianti. No fava beans.
No fava beans?
And no liver. So welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society. My name is Quincy Parker. I've gone by other names like Hey Quincy Parker or Kyle Quincy Parker or That Dude. And there have been various epithets attached to my name over the years, some of which are NSFW, and therefore will not be memorialized in this particular arena.
By the way, if you are at work, here's to you.
Yes.
Thanks for taking on the equivalent of the night shift.
Indeed.
Sunday.
Well, I mean, given that it's a podcast, there's no real expectation that they're only listening on Sunday. That's just for our Guardian Talk Radio listeners.
I'm sorry, I had on a pedant filter. Didn't really hear.
Well, Mr. Pettit, why don't you introduce yourself?
And I am Matthew Kelly.
Good. Matthew, you and I have started this this journey some months ago now. We've been so far able to enjoy single malt whiskeys, blended whiskeys, bourbons, even some tequila and rum. And today, on the show, I get to have an experience that I have been jealous of you and your ability to have as we do this show. And that experience is that today I am joining you in having never had this particular single malt whiskey before. I've had the expressions that are sort of surrounding it, but today, for the first time, we will be both experiencing the Highland Park 18-year-old single malt whiskey together. And I'm incredibly excited. Having opened the bottle to pour you your dram for the purposes of the show, I have been enjoying the light heather aromas. There's a slight candy, maybe toffee note that I'm hearing. It's a hearing that I'm getting from the nose.
This is such a good whiskey on the nose that Quincy is experiencing synesthesia.
Indeed. And in addition, it's a very blue whiskey, the deep blue. Of course, it's
the only thing that I am taking a little exception to at the moment, and this is not a complaint, is your use of the word dram, because this is quite a healthy portion, which I'm glad to take today.
Well, good.
Usually I'm a little more on the very sippy side, mm-hmm. just for taste, but it's a week that calls for celebration.
It is. I am going to offer you the first official comment on the nose of the Highland Park 18. While you are sipping through your nostril, I will talk about some of the distinct features that make the Highland Park sort of a unique distillery. One of the things that they do is they turn their mash by hand, which they claim allows for sort of an even, very balanced flavor throughout the malting process. And then they smoke it over peat from a nearby peat field. According to them, that imparts, that heather being a very uniquely Scottish sort of an aromatic note. So the peatiness in this should be actually almost a little sweet peat. Mm. And then after it's been peated, then they fill it into sherry oak casks from Spain to age. And we've had some great experience with single malts aged in sherry oak. Mm-hmm. The Macallan comes to mind. And I'm now curious as to, you've had some time to enjoy the nose. What do you think?
Definitely picking up that peat. I agree. It has a bit of that sweet note to it. I don't know how that's going to play out on the palate. Mm-hmm. But in addition to what you would expect with a nice scotch, the classic sort of caramel. Mm-hmm. I am detecting a bit of apricot today.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if that's just my mood.
But It might be.
Yeah. I'm particularly, once again, very intrigued by the legs on this thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to just a drop, maybe half a drop of water to open that up after the first sip, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I catch that apricot, maybe stone fruit, mm-hmm. Like a roasted peach or something like that. Mm. But it's very subtle. It's very subtle. And that's one of the things before we taste and talk about the flavors. Occasionally I'll have a conversation about what does Scotch taste like? What does it really taste like? And
you know, I had a conversation on Thursday with someone at an event at T Square, oddly enough. They call it the sophisticated smoke. And so they, you know, I have a thing there on Thursday evenings where they do a pairing of cigars and a whiskey of some sort.
Ah, and you have kept this to yourself.
They just started Thursday class.
Mm, yes.
And I did put it as my status on my WhatsApp, which tells me something.
So we could do a whole episode about social media.
We could.
Continue.
Thank you. And this conversation was basically that all the scotch that he drinks tastes alike. He can't distinguish between the even with the different ages and so on and so forth. And it was a really interesting point because what we are talking about here is subtlety, right? There are five regions in Scotland that are sort of the home regions that produce Scotch whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And the Highlands, one looks like Islay, it's pronounced Isla, I-S-L-A-Y.
Mm-hmm.
Campbellton, the Lowlands, and Speyside. And whiskies from these regions all sort of tend to have similar flavor profiles. So if all you're drinking is whiskeys from the Highlands, then you will tend to find a lot of similarity between the whiskeys that you're drinking. And the most popular whiskeys, especially in the Bahamas, are Highland single malts. Glenlivet, Glenfiddich, the Macallan, Highland Park, Glenlochlis. You know, these are all actually Highland single malts. And so they do have a similar flavor profile. If you want to taste something that is a single malt whiskey that has a very distinctly different flavor, then the best option is to look for a Scotch from a different region. Speyside also has some very popular single malts available here in the Bahamas, like the Talisker is a Speyside, you know. Then there's the Lowlands. Then there's Campbellton and the Isla. The Isla Scotches are really gorgeous. So we're talking about a degree of subtlety here in terms of what the flavor of this particular single malt is going to be. So that's one of the reasons why you start with the nose, because it prepares your taste buds, it prepares your imagination, all of which goes into what you're tasting, for the experience of the liquid on the lips.
The liquid.
Yes. And this amber, this is a very deep amber liquid. It is not as light golden as some of the other single malts that we've had. And this looks more like a bourbon in the glass than a single malt scotch. And so having had some time to let it open up and let those aromas permeate our little podcast recording environment, I invite you now, Matthew, to do the thing and take your first sip.
So that's very interesting. The peat is quite forward, but also the nose is quite different coming up for the sip. And I don't want to say that it's alcohol forward, but the sting is there. Mm-hmm. And it's almost spicy, the experience of that first sip. And I have to say, this is much more pleasant to me than most of the very peaty and very smoky scotches that I've experienced from this area.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I need another sip.
All right, well, while you minister to your needs. I will.
I don't want to say it's less complex, but like there are fewer notes.
Mm-hmm.
But the subtlety amongst like the mixture and the melody is purer,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. I think it can be thought of also in terms of focus, right? The focus is on, for me, the smokiness from the heather peat, the sweetness from the sherry oak casks, and the balance between those two major notes, which come together to form a most pleasing whole. This is very, very nice. It's a little more, it's a little stronger on the alcohol front,
mm-hmm.
than I think I expected. Usually the older the scotches are, they kind of mellow out a little bit more in terms of that alcohol vibe. But this is, it's compounding as you take more than one sip.
Mm.
You know, and for me, the compounding is enhancing. The tasting notes talk about toffee. And as a Scotch drinker, whenever I hear toffee, I know that what they really mean is a sweet roundness.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm getting from this.
I tell you what,
mm-hmm.
I was not getting that at all until this third sip, which is after two drops,
mm-hmm.
of water. So I'm not sure if those are more sort of water soluble chemicals.
Maybe.
You know, exactly what the chemistry is doing there. But, or you might have just primed my mind. Like, I didn't taste any toffee. Now I do. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, whiskey is such a beautiful thing, I think, because it is so subjective. There are some objective floors and maybe ceilings,
mm-hmm.
right? And in this way, it's rather like film and theater for me, right? In that I'm not going to yuck on your yums for what you enjoy. But there are objective measures as to whether the acting was a particular way, especially in terms of effectiveness towards some goal that the drama is mm-hmm. trying to elicit, right? Mm-hmm. And so melodrama has its place and actually is a good thing if you are going for that, right? But everybody's experience in the seat is going to be different.
Indeed.
And every time you sit in the seat, it's going to be different. And every time, I wouldn't go so far as to say every sip of this, right? But every time you break this out, it's going to be a slightly different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the beauty of this entire thing.
The philosophical bent that we have taken, I think, is appropriate for this particular scotch because Highland Park is a very story-focused distillery.
Mm.
You know, they are very interested in Viking history. They're very interested in the history of the distillery and the surrounding area, and it makes sense that it would spark something philosophical in our discussion as we're tasting it. So I like that. I like that a lot. This is really good. I'm sorry. I need another sip.
No problem. Well, I have an extra measure today.
Mm-hmm.
One, just as a little bit of a celebration. I can't really say exactly what, but I would like to raise my glass to my team at Arrowlink. They'll know what that's about.
Indeed. And
hopefully in time, everyone else will as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, love you guys. Excellent job. Here's to the future. But also, I'm looking forward to just sipping this and listening to your querying of history.
We'll see.
I'm looking for the right euphemism here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's going to be much in the way of my own input.
Well, I disagree, actually.
We'll
see.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm going to try and take a Socratic approach to this,
mm-hmm.
right? Or even less so. Just follow my own curiosity and amusement of the whole situation. So, you know, whenever you're ready, I'm curious as to exactly how you want to approach this topic that you brought up with me yesterday.
So today is... two days past, I believe, the U.S., the first presidential debates between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, and the host was talking to professors of history and politics to try to answer his basic question, which is the same as mine. You know, why is it that in our country, which has a two-party system that is not mandated by law, do we only have the two options that we have? In the U.S., the amount of dissatisfaction with the fact that the choices for president are Joseph Biden and Donald Trump, you know, that dissatisfaction is incredibly widespread. In the Bahamas, our politics is different because we don't have so many layers of government, which impinges on how politics plays out in our country. But we also have a distinct level of dissatisfaction with the political parties that are our two options, according to Ingram. I remember sitting in the House as a reporter when Ingram looked over to Christie and said, if I can't have it, you will have it. Ain't nobody else can have this. Whether or not he was responding to the culture or trying to lead the culture, I leave up to the listener. But before I go through this extensive list of third-party options that we have had in this country since the 1970s, I want to get your take first and foremost on this statement. Fred Mitchell, before joining the PLP or the FNM, was known as an activist who would champion whatever cause his conscience suggested to him that he championed. There were very few marches or protests that didn't see Fred Mitchell in the front row or holding a sign or leading, right? And he insisted consistently that it was time for a third wave. It was time for a third option. The fact that Fred, as adamant as he had always been about the need for a third option, decided to become entrenched in the Progressive Liberal Party, it suggests that there really is no place in Bahamian politics for a third force, for a third wave, for a third party. I contrast that with during the last election, and we've mentioned this before on the show, the people who went to the beach instead of to the polls, the people who, led by the academics at the University of the Bahamas, decided to opt out of the system, plus the 46,000 FNMs who refused to vote for their party for whatever reason. Are we not a country where a third party has a shot at actual power? And I don't mean ever. I mean right now in 2024 as you and I are sitting and talking.
Okay. Oh, sorry. That's not rhetorical.
No. I said I want to get your take on this question.
Does a third entity have a shot at power? Okay, one clarifying question.
What do you consider to be power? Are you talking about straight up government?
Let's start with getting a seat in the House of Assembly.
Getting a seat. Does a third... Yeah. So I could get a seat. Not easily. There's a sort of heyday for independence, I think late 90s, I think. 97.
Mm-hmm. The question isn't about independence, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're a third entity.
I'm talking about, I don't mean as an independent individual. I mean a third party.
No. To answer all the levels of your question.
That's the end of that. Why do you believe that to be the case?
Well, I think it apropos that you have asked the question, which is the very tool that I first suggest that anyone use. Why?
Mm-hmm.
So, why? Okay, let's pretend that there's a third party and people want to vote them in and they can get a seat, maybe more. How do they get a seat?
You get elected.
Okay, mm-hmm. How do you get elected? People vote for you. Why do people vote for you?
They don't care.
They don't... No. Why do they vote? For one person or another?
Self-interest.
Self-interest. Okay. How does the self-interest manifest?
Well, I think that's part of the challenge, isn't it? Is if you are not able to convince however many people in a constituency mm-hmm. that it is in their best interest to vote for you, regardless of the prevailing paradigm, then you might have a challenge.
I mean, that's putting it mildly. But what is there any mechanism that you can think of that you can actually convince someone. Because you see, the choice isn't just you, right? Let's put aside the opt-out of the system argument for the moment, which I think, while is completely incorrect, does bear some scrutiny and discussion as to exactly why. I don't think that most people will get the really solid reasons why that's a bad idea with a capital B and I. But let's put it on the side for now. You have three choices in this scenario. You have two incumbent parties. When I say incumbent, I mean in the political power system, and the third one. Okay. You are going to weigh them up next to each other. It's not just one sounds good to you in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
You're comparing. So if I like A, let's call it the Alice Party, and I strongly dislike the Bob Party, and the Charlie Party, I'm all right with. But I see that the Alice Party, which is the party that I really want to vote for, is unlikely to win, right? I have a choice. Do I vote my conscience and register what it is that I philosophically adhere to, so that the news can report 15% of people voted this way, and we can extrapolate from that as a poor proxy. The people believe in, you know, the Green Party, or, you know, Save the Dolphins, or whatever it is, right? Or I could decide that I want to have a much more tangible effect on my surroundings and therefore destiny. What I put to you is that most people are not going to be thinking in the ivory tower fashion,
mm-hmm.
that I need to make a political and philosophical statement. They're going to take the option that gives them the most agency in the particular situation that they're in, i.e., I'm not going to vote for anything in particular. I am going to vote against that which I detest, or as closely detest as, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not so much that I am going to vote for Charlie. I'm just making sure that Bob does not get in. And I think that if you take that mapping and put it out into the Bahamian political sphere, you can see a very, very tight correlation. And I would put it so far as to say that this is causation in action.
I hear you. I, as a reporter who has covered multiple elections,
mm-hmm.
I can tell you that the scenario you have presented is, in fact, quite accurate.
I will go one step further to finish answering your question.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the question is, why is it that I do that? And the answer that I come back with is, well, that's the way the system is set up. Well, what do you mean? Why is it that it's like that? And I don't mean like what the historical circumstances leading to this is. I mean, like, why does it work the way that it works? It works the way because we use first past post. Now, this is not saying that single transferable vote or any other proportional voting system will solve everything. I'm saying that if you have first past post, which we do, you inevitably will come to a two-party system dominated in the fashion that we have right now.
Which, oddly enough, is exactly the conclusion that the history professor on my podcast came to. So the reason that I wrote this list is because often there is, in the Bahamian discussion, especially around the water coolers and in the living rooms and front rooms and at the dining room table, there is almost a deliberate, well, it feels to me deliberate anyway, refusal to acknowledge history, right? And a belief that we do not have options. So before I do any actual conversation about any of these things, I'm going to just read you a list that does not include the Progressive Liberal Party.
I'm gonna smile.
Or the Free National Movement.
This whole time, as you're saying this, right?
Or the United Bahamian Party.
I'm in agreement with your premise, but go ahead.
the Bahamas Democratic Movement. Mm-hmm. The Bahamas Democratic Party, which is a different entity.
Yes, yes.
The Bahamas Constitution Party. Mm-hmm. The Democratic National Alliance.
Yes.
The Coalition for Democratic Reform.
Yes.
The People's Movement. The Bahamas National Coalition Party. God's People Party.
Yes. So far I've heard of all of them. Some of them have started to become conflated in my mind. But I know each of these options in the past, and I can tell you that I, except for maybe the CDR, that one time I was never tempted.
The Vanguard Nationalist and Socialist Party.
I've heard some stories about that.
The Bahamian Way Forward Movement.
Not sure.
The Coalition of Independence. The Grand Commonwealth Party.
Okay.
The Kingdom Government Movement. The Justice Labor Party. The Righteous Government Movement. The United Coalition.
We should have a Righteous Kingdom Government Movement.
The National Development Party. The Social Democratic Party.
The NDP, that was...
The Workers' Party, the Bahamian National Party, the Commonwealth Democratic Party. 22 different third-party options that are not the PLP, not the FNM, not the UBP.
Let me ask the important question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a proper acronym among them?
Absolutely.
What is that?
There are at least three or four. The BDM.
That's not an acronym. An acronym is an initialism that you could pronounce as a word. Maybe COI. I apologize for taking you so far, of course.
Now, I have given you 22 options.
No, you haven't.
I have told you that at some point in history,
yes,
there have been these parties that have existed.
These parties, and some of them may have even been on the ballot. Or rather, representatives of these parties may have been on the ballot.
In 1982, mm-hmm. The Bahamas Democratic Movement contested 12 seats. 1982, it's 1992. Mm-hmm. And they won less than 1% of the vote.
1% of the vote total?
Total.
Or in their
less than 1% of the total vote.
Okay. I mean, I would have thought it'd been... You would have said, 0.001.
Less than 1% of the vote.
It's included, I guess.
The Democratic National Alliance contested the 2012 election, and they won 8.5% of the vote. Mm-hmm. They contested the 2017 election and won 4.5% of the vote.
Yes.
the Coalition for Democratic Reform was founded in 1999 as a split from the PLP and from the BDM, with Dr. Bernard J. Nottage as the leader.
Yes.
Fenton Niemoore was a member as well. Mm-hmm. So was Charles Maynard, both of whom later went to the FNM. The Vanguard Nationalist and Socialist Party in 1971 fielded five candidates, was founded in 71, mm-hmm. fielded five candidates in 1977, and won 55 votes. They fielded 12 candidates in 1981 and won 181 votes.
Ooh, an improvement.
Proportionally speaking, I don't know if I could say that. The Workers' Party fielded candidates in the 1982 election, and they won a total of 31 votes. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to read out every one of these, Q?
The Bahamian Democratic Party, which was a split from the FNM, led by J. Henry Bostwick, the late J. Henry Bostwick, was the most successful of the third parties. This is all the way back in 1977. They won six seats in the House of Assembly, and they received 27% of the national vote, mm-hmm. making them the strongest opposition party in a then multi-party House of Assembly. I point them out in particular because they show a precedent that suggests that if the argument is compelling enough, Bahamians might take a flyer on a third party. Do you agree that that is what their performance in the 1977 elections means?
I don't know enough about the circumstances.
Forget the circumstances. Just look at the results.
The results don't tell you enough to answer your specific question. What I can say without fear of contradiction is that that does not show that you can sustain a third party.
They did later go back to the FNM.
Yeah. I would say that even if they didn't, though, and they became strong, that the FNM would have withered away.
Why?
Again, go back to the core mechanism. And then pile on top of that all of the other sustaining feedback loops. So the money, who's going to be supporting, how you split that money up, etc. It's just, it's not impossible, but it's super unlikely that such a thing would be sustained, where there would be three viable parties. Certainly never going to be where three parties that any one of them could win the government. It's just not going to happen.
And
not in this system.
And why do you think it's not going to happen? You keep saying again as if you have made a point that is uncontestable and incontrovertible fact. My continued questioning tells me that I disagree. I don't think that that's an incontrovertible fact.
Bring the evidence.
Evidence?
Where are the receipts?
What receipts?
At least make an argument
How difficult is it to prove a negative?
How that game can be broken.
Shenandoah Cartwright ran in St. Barnabas.
He did.
In the last election. Mm-hmm. St. Barnabas has always been a PLP constituency when it exists. thank you, gerrymandering gods. And Shannadon tells a very blunt recounting of his campaigning in that constituency. When he first ran in 2017, he told the people, take a chance on me. They took a chance on him, keeping in mind what they did to Mr. Christie. It wasn't really, right? When he ran again in 2021, thanks to Hubert Minnis doing what Hubert Minnis did, he talked about going door to door and being told point blank, you know, as a PLP, I can try vote for you because you do a good job, but you know, as a PLP. And enough people put aside their partisan leanings and voted for Shannadon that he retains his position as the Member of Parliament for St. Barnabas even today. Against the backdrop of that constituency's history and those people's own inclination politically.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a, at least in the context of people voting against their own political interests, one example of somebody actually getting into and retaining power.
First of all, I reject that that is the case anyway, right? I don't think that they voted against their political interests in that case, which we could get into, right? But even without that, you are not, to me, showing me anything else besides people are willing to switch between two major parties and occasionally an independent. Whether that... Let me rephrase. Occasionally...
Matthew, let me stop you here. Let me make this simple. I grant you everything you're saying.
Great.
Why do we not have the and it can't just be money. Why are we so opposed? And if it is just money, then you say that, but I don't think that's what it is. Why are we so opposed to a third party?
We're not opposed and, to
and
a third
I don't
party.
Mean I don't mean one election.
Right.
A third party gets a couple of seats and then dissipates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the formation and sustainability of at least one other political party outside of the two big ones. Why does that... What do we have against that?
We don't have anything against that. The system is simply arranged in such a fashion that it is highly unlikely that that would happen.
What arrangement of the system prevents that from happening?
Listen, go back to what we discussed earlier. We don't even have to get into other mechanisms. The mechanism outlined with how people vote against in a first past post situation to maximize the outcome, the least bad outcome for themselves, is enough.
Anyway, I don't know that I agree, but...
I know you don't, but here's the thing. You're not bringing anything else to the party. Show me where I'm wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Give me some evidence that's not an outlier where I could say, yeah, well, DePuch won Shirley in 97. I think it was 97.
It was Tennyson Wells, Ingram himself, Perry Christie, B.J. Nottage. The ground is littered with independents, yes.
These do not support the idea that a third party is a stable situation in the system.
However, that SIP supports the idea that the Highland Park 18 is definitely going on the list.
You know, this is so good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to support that move.
Excuse me?
I'm not going to support it.
How dare you?
Because it is really, really good, but it's not different enough for me to say, okay, this definitely...
Not different enough from what?
From the others.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was afraid this day would come. And here it is.
Don't worry, it's not a veto power that I have. It's going on the list. Because you want it on the list. But I'm just not agreeing with you today. I agree that this is great. But again, it is, to me, similar enough.
You put the Highland Park 12 on the list.
Yes.
You think this deserves to be on the list more than the Highland Park 12?
I'd have to do an AB on those.
I'm going to put it on the list purely in a provisional position. Because for the list to be real,
mm-hmm.
we both have to agree on every position.
Okay.
So I do not wish to create any kind of disparity between, you know, the
level. It has to be two thumbs up.
Yeah, two thumbs. I mean, look,
don't get me wrong.
Two thumbs way, this is, way up.
Yeah, this is two thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not different enough. And you said, as you said, the world of whiskey is so wide and varied mm-hmm. that I think I'm going to put my foot down here and just rest for a while until I experience something novel enough to say, ah, this must go on the list.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I accept that. I feel like next calendar year, we probably will want to create a five-part list so that we can say this is the best whiskey in this style or from this region that we tasted over the course of the year. That way, it's apples being compared with apples, and then perhaps we could have a
Granny Smith to Macintosh.
Then we could have a separate list that we pick, you know, the best ones from all of the different five regions that we like. Just a suggestion.
We're gonna grow into that for sure.
Yeah, I feel so. So when you look at who's led third parties in the Bahamas.
It just amuses me to no end that this is such a concern for you.
Well, it's not a concern exactly. It is something that I'm just really curious about. Because if the number of people who expressed dissatisfaction with the FNM in 2021 had turned around and voted for a third party.
Yeah.
That's 46,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
That party would have definitely at least gotten two or three seats in the House of Assembly.
Yeah. And then there would be mea culpas and this and that. And the next election, they would have either defected or would lose their seats.
Because
of where the power structures lie. And this is such a hard coordination problem, the way things are set up.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, Matthew. And I wish I could say that I think you were wrong. And part of me wants to say that purely for the purposes of, you know, conflict on the radio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like we as a... I feel like we as a country have... We have a small challenge, right? We often say we want something. And we may even shout it from the mountaintops that we want something. We will go on talk shows. We will write letters to the editor.
Mm-hmm.
We will have news interviews around the water cooler. We will argue with great erudition, you know, at fish fry. And we have a Guinness or a Kalik or a Sands in our hand. You know, who drinking Kalik anymore? Right? It's a, and we have a Sands or a Strong back in our hand or a High Rock. Yes, I see you smiling. And you're right to smile. You know, we talk with great gusto about how dissatisfied we are
mm-hmm.
with the choices that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes time to do the hard work of creating an avenue for another choice or other choices, we just seem to find it too easy to just fall back to the status quo. And I think the status quo is so comfortable that they don't even worry about it. The prime minister of the country can get up in the House of Assembly, look across at his opposite number, and say, either I will have it or you will have it.
Yes.
And the country will sit back and say, yes, Amasa.
Well, you're not wrong. It's a very stable situation.
I wish I was wrong. I wish somebody could point me in a direction of a group of people who really believe strongly that there must be another option and that they're willing to do whatever it takes to build a platform and a reality where that other option exists.
Are you, see, look, just that thought alone has so much wrapped up in it, right? Do you want a different option to the two that are there now? Do you want this to be long-term an option? Do you want there to be possible other options? Because in one, you keep the system and you supplant one of the parties, right? Or you take over one of the parties eventually. You know, that kind of happens over very long time periods.
Yeah, let me be very clear then. I'm not talking about the two parties that currently exist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean structurally. I wonder whether we would be better off. It's not a question of what I want. It's a question of would we be better off, would we be better served in our politics and governance
mm-hmm.
if we did not simply have to choose between the FNM and the PLP, but we had a broader palette of options that perhaps might express a more refined version or vision
mm-hmm.
of the country's destiny?
See, I think so. I think that we are small enough, right? And this is speculation, obviously, but at the same time, I am optimistic that if we allowed ourselves more access to the brain power and willpower that exist in the country, and it's not just filtered through these two parties, that we would be in an overall better position. I think that we are succeeding to the extent that we are, despite ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Which makes me super optimistic about the talent that takes over. Oh no, not. But that the talent exists.
It does exist.
I am optimistic about it. Now, whether I am not so optimistic that it will be harnessed well, but you know, Change usually comes from outside the system. And there are mechanisms in place for access to these people to be able to make an impact without having to go through either the civil service or the parties. So, you know, there's at least that.
There's at least that. The Highland Park 18-year-old single malt whiskey, spicy, smoky, a little sweet, rich, round, very potent. Still getting that nice warm esophageal burn. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely a keeper for me. I'm glad that I got to try this with you, Matthew. What do you think?
This is the crackling fire on a winter's evening, where some of the other ones we've had is that just nice glow on a rainy night. And
it's I can't like say it should be on the list.
I can't say that I'm mad at that at all.
Yeah, it sounds like you said it should be on the list. I'm just saying. Every time you describe it, it sounds like it should be on the list. But I will reserve the list for the two thumbs up exceptional moments where you have to, where you have no choice. Fair enough. I'm very, very glad that I decided that this would be our dram today. I wonder what. Oh dear. I just got a WhatsApp from my daughter Maya, and it has to do with work. And my suspicion is that the next WhatsApp will have to do with collection from work at 5 o'clock, which means 5 o'clock Palmdale traffic, which means that I will need another bottle of the Highland Park 18-year-old just to deal with that.
Post traffic, I want to be clear. Do not indict my podcast partner. I still need him.
Indeed. Matthew, thank you for your time and energy today. Thank you for your insight. I know you didn't think you were going to talk quite so much, but that's my job, isn't it?
Dear Lord.
Yes, indeed. Any final thoughts about the Highland Park 18?
No. I agree with your glowing assessment. It's just not... I look forward to some new experiences. Yeah. And so I'm sure we're going to jump to another region pretty soon.
Most of the stuff that we've had so far is Highland Scotch. So let's make a commitment that the next thing we try will be either from Highland or from Space High.
Fair enough.
Until the next time, my friend, until we meet again, as they say, friends. Until we meet again!
Yeah.
Ciao.
That's Zarovia!
Check it out.